First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me here to this really great place. It's also nice to talk the second time in a row after Axel, Becky. You gave really fantastic introduction, so I can keep the introduction relatively short. I also want to apologize for talking the third time in a row. This is giving the same talk, so some of the audience may be bored off by this. So this is the second version of what we call DFTD, so a dispersion correction for density functional theory. You also would like to do the whole chemistry, not only non-covalent interactions, but covalent interactions as well. And this is some schedule for my talk. I will give you one, I guess this is a very spectacular example where this shows up, this effect. Give you some overview about dispersion corrections in DFT. Then I will introduce to you what is new in our approach. We are calling it from now on DFT-D3, which is the third version of our dispersion correction. Then I will give you some benchmarking for non-covalent interactions. This is, of course, the most important point for such dispersion correction. But also, then later, I will talk about some chemical benchmarks for traditional thermochemistry. And maybe I have some time to talk about the interactions of molecules with surfaces. This is an example we discovered recently while setting up a benchmark of isomerization energies. We already had investigated an isomerization energy benchmark, but for small molecules. Now we look to the literature and look to organic reactions where one molecule is transformed maybe in many reaction steps to the same compound but just an isomer of this, so move bonds around but the same total chemical composition. And we set up some reference data for this. In this case, this is the worst case. It's the error of the interaction energy, or the reaction energy is about 75 kcal or more. And when you're doing a plain B3-lib calculation for this isomerization reaction, you get an error with B3-lib of about 50 or 60 kcal per mole. Not 0.5, not 5, 60. This is the error. And you can estimate with some dispersion correction that the contribution of dispersion to this reaction is on the order of 50%. So as a rough guess. So 30 to 40 kcal per mole. Depending on your choice of the dispersion correction, this is the contribution. So I think this shows very clearly that we have to discuss it. So some kind of overview. I exclude here all the virtual orbital-dependent methods that we just discussed last week in Lausanne at a nice workshop. I only discuss here corrections that only depend on the density, or as in DFTD, only on an interatomic pair potential. So we have the van der Waals density functional of Langlet. This is clearly a non-local contribution to the potential. This is some kind of ab initio way to include the dispersion energy. We also can use parameterized density functions. This is the style of Don Schuler. You can also add an effective non-electron potential to mimic dispersion energies. But we include it in an interatomic manner, as Axel already told you. This is the cheapest way, and this is the most straightforward way, I would call it. The good message of these two approaches, opposed to the others here, is that it's asymptotically for most of the systems correct. So when you have a large system, then this will give you, these two approaches will give you the right dispersion energy. There's, of course, some long history of what we call DFTD. It all starts with Scholes and Arvis in the 70s who tried to improve Hartree-Fock interaction energies by adding an atom pairwise dispersion potential. This is the first DFT work I'm aware of where such a potential has been used, but for some special systems. This has been then rediscovered several times. Some people are here in the audience who did this work. So we started in 2004, and then in 2006, the second version, and the third version in 2010. Important points here, or papers you already heard from Axel, how the they differ, the approaches differ mainly how the C6 coefficients and the damping functions are used or derived. In recent years, three important approaches appeared in the literature how to compute the C6 coefficient for an atom in a molecule. And you can do this from the exchange hole dipole moment, you can derive this from an atomic volume ratio, and you can do this from a based on atomic response in a molecule. And this is a false, different version for doing this. A common problem for all the approaches that try to couple an asymptotically, semi-classically correct description of dispersion with a short-range description of correlation by DFT, there's always a problem that you have to merge the two approaches. And there's some region that I would call the region of medium-range correlation. You can call it overlap dispersive because it has the features of dispersion energy, but it's the orbitals start to overlap here. And in this region, you have to damp this semi-classical expansion, and also the density functional description of correlation goes away as exponentially. So then in this region, all the methods have to introduce also empirical parameters. So we try to be as non-empirical as possible, but because of our lack of knowledge of this region here, there are in most of the methods, I guess in all methods, a few empirical parameters. So this is an example of what I mean with short, medium, and long range. So methane dimers, of course, a long range dispersion problem. This is clear. The correlation exchange hole correlation problem in ethane is also clear. It's short range. And then in between, organic chemists would call this a 1-3 interaction, for example, in propane. This is some kind of medium range correlation problem, in our opinion. And you also have to take care of this problem when you want to do accurate thermal chemistry. So DFTD in its second version is a rather widely used method, but we know that it's not perfect. In particular, it's not very accurate for the methods. And for many parts of the periodic system of elements, we know or we can expect that it is not very accurate. We have a limited accuracy, in particular for some biosystems, and the asymptotics are also not fully satisfactory. And we want to eliminate the empiricism as far as possible. So we want to have some kind of ab initio approach. So now, what is new in this method in the revised third version? We have now non-empirical C6 coefficients specifically for each pair AB of atoms, computed by time-dependent DFT. In a similar manner, we computed pair-specific non-empirical cutoff radii. They are used or necessary in the damping of the dispersion energy at short range. They are computed by DFT. And we have a new model that I'm going to explain to you for the geometry dependence of the C6 coefficient. This is also new in this version. Previously, in all the simple DFTD approaches, the C6 were fixed and then remain constant for all atoms in the molecule. And also, quite important, I think, we have parameters, I would not call this parameters anymore, coefficients for the entire periodic table up to plutonium. So you can start doing calculations for any system you're interested in. So in a nutshell, it's just give me a set of coordinates, so there's no density involved. So this simple dispersion correction only depends on the coordinates and the atomic numbers. So it then computes for the dispersion energy, so it's a relatively general approach. It is asymptotically correct for all finite systems and for non-metallic infinite systems. For metallic infinite systems, there are some small deviations from exactness. So if you put in an exact TBDFT, this is also exact, so in principle, for a gas of weakly interacting atoms. So when you give me a gas of some atoms and then it's exact at the beginning and then there's some seamless transition to the bulk. This is not exact anymore, but gives you in for many distances a rather accurate estimation of the dispersion energy. So from the very beginning, this approach is designed to work with standard functionals. So there's no need to adjust. You can adjust the functional to this dispersion correction, but you can use it as it is for any standard density functional you can think of. Meanwhile, we have more than parameters for more than 30 density functionals. We need two empirical parameters to be adjusted for each density function. This is to adjust our correction to this medium range correlation region where the overlap starts. Okay, and so of course very fast, no density involved, so we get that, can also do straightforward analytical forces. So this is a simple DFTD formula. The number here indicates that's the two-body term. We also investigated three-body terms, but I only want to talk here about the two-body term. We have the power series. You already saw this formula. This is the most important term, r to the power of 6. This gives the asymptotic description. This is not scaled anymore as in previous version. It's just damped. So we have here a damping function for this sixth order. Then we have the eighth order term and 10 and 12 and so on and so forth. I investigated all these terms up to order 14 or so, but found out that the higher orders make the correction rather unstable, in particular for metallic systems, for heavier metallic systems. Then the coefficients here increase to really very big numbers. So C10 and C12 for gold are millions, and this makes the correction unstable. So I said, for convenience, for simplicity, I stopped here at the eighth order term here. And this is scaled. So this is one empirical parameter that only scales the eighth order. This is to adapt, to adjust the correction for the short range part. And you already heard really nicely in Axel's talk how different the density functions behave regarding the repulsiveness. So I simply call it, all the density functions have a different repulsiveness. And we have to account for this. And this S8 is more or less responsible to account for the different repulsiveness of the exchange functions. This is in full agreement with what Axel said. We use a damping function proposed by Martin and Gordon co-workers. There is some discussion if this damping function has to go to zero or to so some finite value. Maybe we can discuss anything about this. So this is not a problem. In my view, this is not a problematic issue here. And then the C8 coefficients for pair AB are computed from C6 for pair AB and atomic expectation values that can also be computed by DFT. So this is an old Tucker recursion formula. So we have only two empirical parameters that have to be adjusted for each density function, and that's it. So now, how to compute the important coefficients here, so C6, and here we have the cutoff radius for the atom pair AB. So we have two issues that are really important. So now I will tell you how to compute these values. This is simple. The cutoff radius is simply the radius, a critical radius, at which the density functional description of the interaction starts to begin, when you decrease the distance. And the simple idea is take the ground state densities of the two atoms A and B and compute the first order interaction energy when the atoms are, and the spins are high, coupled in a high spin sense. So then there's no chemical interaction, it's just Pauli repulsion between the two atoms. And then you get out for different atom pairs, you get out simple exponentials. And you can do this for the entire periodic table. So I did it and got about 4,000 different potential curves, all entirely repulsive. And then for simplicity, we simply picked out, I set up here some kind of threshold value, and this then leads here to a cutoff radius. This is a measure of size, sp- specifically for the interaction AB. So this is CC is larger than CN, and CN is larger than CO. And just for convenience, I picked out an energy cutoff here so that I got the same radius here for carbon than in the old version of the FTD. So just for convenience. These values here, this, the radius here, is anyway scaled later here in this formula, so there's no problem with that. So now we have to have the cutoff radius for all element pairs specifically. No empiricism involved here, except for the scaling here in the damping formula. Now, as important are the dispersion coefficients, of course. I already said that there are many approaches how to compute the dispersion coefficients. It's well known for two atoms, for two free atoms, it's simple Casimir-Polder formula. You have to compute the polarizability, the average polarizability for atom A at imaginary frequencies, and you have to integrate over these frequencies. This is well known. This is standard stuff. But that's not what we want. We don't want to have the free atoms. We want to have the atoms in the molecule. And Axel already explained to you a very clever idea how to compute the C6 for an atom in a molecule. And this now is a different way to do it. The idea is rather simple. Just rewrite the Casimir-Polder formula, not using atomic polarizabilities, but molecular ones. We are aiming at molecular polarizabilities. Now we put in here molecular polarizabilities for reference molecules, and these reference molecules are hydrides. All elements in the periodic table form a reasonable or stable hydride. So we can compute the plutonium hydride, uranium hydride, and then we put it in here in this formula, and then we subtract the effect of the hydrogen in that reference molecule. And you can do this for molecule A, and you can do this also for molecule B. And when you subtract here the polarizability of hydrogen, and then the only assumption you make here is that there's some additivity of polarizabilities or volumes. And then you have to integrate as before, and then you get out specifically this C6 for A and B, but with reference to the molecules AM, HN, and BK, HL. So this is a specific C6. Does this work? So this works. This is relatively well known that carbon is the most problematic case. So the C6 of carbon shows the most, so the largest variations from the free atom. This is literature values. Free atom is about 46. And then it decreases. So this is relatively common. The free atom C6 is the biggest one, and then it decreases in molecular situations. So we can compute this now using ethane, acetylene, and the free atom by TDDFT with a special choice of the density functional. And we get out more or less the same trend here. So this is the well-known hybridization dependence is reproduced here. So the approach works in principle. Now, what do we have? We have three or four different C6 coefficients for different reference molecules, but that's not what we want. You're giving me a set of coordinates, and I have to use one C6 coefficient for all the, or different C6 for all the pairs in that molecule. And now the second idea is introduced here. It's not hybridization that makes this dependence here. It's the number of atoms that are coordinated to this carbon atom. So it's the value is high when there's no coordination. Here we have coordination number 2, coordination number 3, coordination number 4. And that's more or less similar behavior as found in many elements. So we make the C6 coefficient coordination number dependent. So we have to compute the coordination number for each atom in the molecule. And this is a simple formula for doing this. It's some kind of step formula. And so this gives a fractional coordination number for atom A in a molecule that is only dependent on the R, on the coordinates. This is an example here, some fictitious transition metal complex. Using this formula, you have to sum up over all the atoms in the molecule. You get reasonable numbers, one for hydrogen, two for carbon here. Even this iron here is a chemically reasonable value. So now it's simple, the rest is simple. We use these coordination numbers as descriptors to pick out the right C6 coefficient for the molecule from the pre-computed values for reference molecules. It's some kind of two-dimensional interpolation scheme. So in this example, we have six reference molecules with six different C6 coefficients. And now we have a molecule with some coordination number that's somewhere here. And we simply want to have the C6 for this special set of two coordination numbers. And this is a one-dimensional cut through this surface here for carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen. And we simply assume an interpolation formula. This is more or less constant here, close to integer numbers, and then more or less linearly goes to the next level of coordination. So carbon goes from almost 50 here to, this is coordination number 1. This corresponds to the CH molecule. This corresponds to ethene, ethane, and so on and so forth. And it's all, for most molecules, what we observe is that this behavior is very similar. So it goes usually, becomes smaller for higher coordination. So that's it. We have pair-specific non-empirical C6 coefficients. They are interpolated, computed from TDDFT. These are all also tabulated. Our C6 depend now on the geometry, on the coordination sphere around each atom, but not on the density. Axis correction and axis C6 coefficients depend on the density. Ours are only coordinate dependent. This is a very big simplification from the very beginning. We know that benchmarking is important. We recently set up a very big set of for benchmarking purposes. So this is a combination of sets that is known in the literature. We have all in all in this set called GMTKN30, general main group, thermochemistry, kinetics, and non-covalent interactions. This is a set that consists of about 1200 single point calculations, and you get out about 800 chemically reasonable energies. So it's composed of subsets. We have basic properties, reaction energies important for chemistry, and in this context the non-covalent interactions are important. And these classes include several subsets. You already heard about the famous S22 set. This is also part of this subset. And of course, we use first the new dispersion correction is benchmarked here on this set, and then later I will benchmark it on the entire set. Hurry up a bit. Here we have C6 coefficients. This is non-empirical, no fitting at all. Our model gives us C6 coefficients. You can compare this with experiments. So calculated here, experiment, logarithmic scale, they vary about many orders of magnitude. So this is rather nice what we get here. 8% is really a good value for this model. This essentially shows how good TDDFT can compute polarizability. This is fantastic, really. I was amazed when I saw this. So energy. So this is for an application. This is of course the most important point. How good are the energies? And as I told you, this correction is made for standard density functionals. So in the publication, I tested 11 density functionals, standard ones, and this is the mean absolute deviations over a subset of this non-covalent interaction energy benchmarks. 130 cases. This is S22. Also intramolecular cases, so conformer relative energies, alkane dimers and rare gas dimers. This is without any correction, of course. You know that DFT cannot describe the dispersion effects. The red bars are the old correction, and the black ones are the new correction. So less empiricism, better accuracy for all density functors you can think of. So there is no reason, at least for me at the present point, to use the old one anymore. It's always better. I also averaged here over the subsets to find out where the improvement comes from. It's mainly the peptide conformers here. These are really, really improved a lot. S22, this is a peptides here. This is a Pavel-Hopsa benchmark set. Relative energies of this one, 10 different conformers. This is coupled cluster reference. This is uncorrected DFT. Forget about it. So you cannot fold proteins with standard DFT. This is the old dispersion correction. Not bad. For almost free, good correction. This is the new one. So almost. So can use a hybrid or GGA functional, and you can fold proteins. We have water and many more. This is graphene. We tested also the asymptotic behavior, which is also better. So now we are in the right ballpark for the graphene sheet interaction. Now we already knew that our old dispersion correction is really bad for metals, in particular for heavy metals. So gold was really a problem. So this is DFTD2 for benzene on gold. Overbinding, the distance is too short. With the blue curve here now, this is in reasonable agreement with experiment and also with van der Waals density function. And the same holds for this big dye here, this pyrrolidine dye on gold. The overbound with the old correction and relatively good, this almost perfect distance and relatively good energy also with a new correction. So no fitting at all for this specific system. This is just the gold parameters as they come out of the approach. So finally, the thermochemical benchmarking. This is the entire set of system, 800 energies, including covalent and non-covalent interactions. Meta GGAs, hybrids, and double hybrids. This is in a weighted MAD with an almost converged basis set. You see, GGAs are worse than hybrids, and hybrids are worse than double hybrids. But there's some big differences here without correction. And when you switch on the correction, more or less all the GGAs then seem to perform relatively similar. Only TPSS is a bit better. The best hybrid functional that we found in this study is this PW6B95. This is exceptional, I don't know why, but this is strongly recommended. It's a not heavily fitted Chula functional, only 6 fitted parameters, opposed to 30 or 40 or so. This is really seems to be a robust choice. And of course, also the double hybrids are better than the hybrids on average when using the correction. So the correction almost always improves also for normal thermochemistry. There's no hesitation to use it in normal stuff. So I have no time for doing this. I want to thank my co-workers on this project. Lars Gerwig did most of the benchmark work, and without Philip Furche's code for time-dependent DFT, this would have not been possible. This has been published here in this JCP. This we have a 24 subset version of this benchmark set. The 30 version will come out soon. The large molecule isomerizations are here, and you can download the code as well as these sets for your purpose. Yeah, finally some advertisement for our 46th symposium on theoretical chemistry that will be held in 2010 in September. So you are invited, and we have some free slots for contributory talks. Many thanks.
Thank you very much, Stefan. By the way, of course, the program had the wrong address. It's the University of Munster.
No problem. Very beautiful, clear talk. Maybe you can help me understand one problem I've always had with this pair. You always take atomic pair coefficients. Now already you're defined by going to a coordination number dependency. But still, I find this difficult to understand because the physics of the von der Waals interaction is the dynamic polarizability. And we know that like molecules have very different dynamic polarizability from atoms. And also, let me take carbon, coordination number 3. Ethylene, you have coordination number 3. Benzene, you have it. Graphene sheet, you have it. But you have very different dynamical polarizabilities in those cases. So I don't understand how you can cover those physically very different situations.
First of all, empirically, this slide shows that you can add atomic values that sum up to the correct molecular C6 coefficient. This is what this slide shows. That means an atom has some identity in the molecule, at least at long distance. We're not talking about short distances. C6 reflect only the case when the molecules are far apart. So there's some identity of an atom in a molecule that reacts to another atom in another molecule only at long distance. There is some local response that has some physics. I mean, I understand your question. Empirically, it's clear. You can add the volumes.
No, I'm not denying
it. Yeah. No. The question is very interesting. Polarizabilities are volumes, and you can add the volumes to some total volumes, and the identity of the atom with some volume is retained. The Shevchenko approach uses volumes, a ratio of free and atomic inner molecule volumes. So some kind of Hirschfeld partitioning is involved there. It's strongly related to Hirschfeld partitioning, the answer to the question, but it's difficult to...
I think that the coefficients, the fact that the coefficients are coordination number dependent, does it mean that if I study chemical reaction, the potential at the surface will be discontinuous in some points?
No. This function is continuous. So we have, it's easy to compute the derivative of the C6 with respect to all quantities. It's more complicated than in standard EFTD, but the derivative is continuous, it's no problem at all. But it changes. C6 changes along a reaction coordinate, as it should be. In Axel's approach, the C6 also changes on every point in space, for every new geometry. Because in his approach, the density changes. In our approach, the coordinates change. This is simpler.
Coordination number is a continuous measure.
It's a continuous measure. It's a continuous measure. Only the coordinates enter. It gives you fractional values that are continuous.